Members will come to order. Education Policy Committee meeting. I'm replacing Representative John Dorn here for the moment, so maybe not too long, hopefully. Our first bill is going to be HF 1680. Representative Meslow, we're ready to hear your bill. And thank you so much, Chairman Biskins, for the opportunity here.
You have a good looking chair this morning.
Well, thank you, Representative Wardlow. But the chair, or
let's talk about the chair.
And I bet you this chair will not be called Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eidgerken. Representative Meslow, do we need someone to move his bill? Do we have someone move?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 1680 to be before the committee. Right. I'm not sure what we're doing with it, though.
Representative Erickson has moved HF 1680 before the committee, and we'll have to decide what to do with this later.
No, Mr. Chair, I can amend that. It's to be re-referred to Education Finance.
This will be re-referred to Education Finance. So, Representative Meslow, if you would proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you on House File 1680. Recently, I had a chance to watch a magician. And he actually took the time to explain to us how the magic worked. What he said is that the best trick is that when he gets you watching what's happening over here, you're not paying attention to what's happening over here. And as I was thinking back on that as I looked at this bill, because as we have spent our time focusing on education, certainly in education finance, and I know here in education policy and reform, we very properly spend a lot of time looking over here, watching the things that are going on in the classroom, focusing on class sizes and those types of things. That's very appropriate. But as we do that, oftentimes we're not looking at what's going on over here. And these are the other services that are provided to our students throughout the day that really equip them to be able to perform in the classroom and to move forward in their lives. And those are the things like the counseling, the school psychologists, the nurses. And so what I'm asking you to do today is to take a moment looking away from the area that you typically spend most of your time and see what's going on in the other with the other hand. That's what we're talking about here. And these support services groups historically have sometimes had some trouble working together. That's not the case here. What's happened is that they've come together, they've looked at the opportunity to support each other as they're supporting the students. What you have before you is a bill that does not provide a mandate, but simply encourages school districts to look at the other hand and to watch this going on. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ralph Maves to speak with you in more detail about that. But I just wanted to frame your thought process as you consider the bill.
Okay. Mr. Maves, if you would state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Maves, and I'm here representing this morning the Student Services Coalition for Effective Education. That is a group that is made up of the school counselors, the school psychologists, the school nurses, the school social workers, and the school chemical health counselors in the state of Minnesota. This is a piece of legislation that we think is very important for the reasons that Representative Meslow suggested. However, if we were the only people, I guess, who felt that, we really shouldn't be here this morning. However, I think that if you were to go back to your districts, if you haven't already, and talk with your school principals, your teachers, your parents, and even the students who are involved with one or more of the Student Services Coalition members, helping them be successful in each school, I think you'd realize just how important these services can be and are. I had an opportunity a few weeks ago to talk with my former superintendent. And as we were talking about a variety of issues, we started talking about student support services. And he said to me, in our district, he said, we consider student support services frontline services right along with the teachers and the principals. He said, with more and more students coming to school with more and more needs, and with the bar being raised higher and higher as far as what we're expecting of students, he said principals and teachers cannot do it by themselves in the schools with the help of parents. He said, we very much need student support services and the role that they play. For those of you who were with the committee last year, I handed out a position paper coming from the National Association of State Boards of Education. And this policy paper was on student support services. And in the paper, the main gist of it was that if we're really going to leave no children behind, that policymakers need to pay close attention to the work that student support services do. And they talked about all of the needs of students nowadays, and again, like my former superintendent, about the demands that are being placed on students to a greater and greater degree as we ratchet up the expectations of students. This is a bill that has come through this committee twice before, and it's a bill that passed through the committee favorably twice before, and we hope that we'll have your support today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Dorn. Representative Meslow, I realize this is not finance, and since this bill is going to go to finance, we'll discuss that there. But in your discussions with the department, are they willing to work on this without our having to appropriate dollars? Or do you foresee that you will have a fiscal note on this when it comes to finance and that this is something they will need additional funds for? Because this is a very interesting directive and one I think that we'll find out quite a bit of information from, but I'm a little concerned that, you know, is the department going to absorb this or will we anticipate a fiscal note?
Representative Messel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson. The bill is specifically designed not to create a mandate and not to require a fiscal note. Instead, instead, the language is to encourage school districts to do two different things. One is, as they're establishing their budgets, to consider the value and importance of the student support services. And the other is to be creative and look for outside sources for alternative funding to support that. So we are specifically not requesting a direct appropriation or a specific dollar amount with this. It's not my intention that there should be a fiscal note or that there should be that kind of a direct impact.
Okay. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Meslow, I commend you. I can see you here. I commend you for bringing this bill forward. I think this is a good way to try to address the absence for most students of counseling and other support services in the schools, just because the need is so high and the ratio of counselors and other support staff to students is so low, or high, I guess, whichever way you look at it. There are very few support staff compared to the number of students in the schools. I regret that this method of solving this problem is necessary. It's basically a way of saying we're not going to provide state funds for this very important service or adequate state funds for it, so go look elsewhere. And I think it's important and necessary to utilize all funds that would be available for these kinds of services. I'm going to support your bill, and I hope the committee does. I only wish that the amendment that I had offered to Representative Klinzing's bill that was before this committee in the last couple of weeks that would have used some of her teacher's stipend funding to fund counselors in the schools would have received the kind of support that I think your bill is going to receive. But that would have required a direct appropriation, a fiscal note from the legislature, and I don't see the willingness to do that, but I hope we can at least support your bill.
Okay. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Carmen, for poking Mr. Chair. Ms. Representative Latz, I just wanted to say that I wasn't going to comment on this bill, but because I'm a co-author, but This bill, I think, has great advantages over your amendment because this bill has all the groups working together rather than just counselors. And that's the point I think Representative Meslow was trying to tactfully make. And your amendment had great advantage over this bill because it had some teeth in it, some funding. So hopefully over time with this bill, which includes all the groups, we can work move forward and actually do something and have some funding behind it with all the groups, because different schools need different things, and I don't think it's up to us to pick and choose amongst the student support groups.
Representative Latz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, are you offering my amendment to this bill then to make the best of all possible worlds?
I guess that was rhetorical. It's good to see. It's good to see that both sides of the aisle are working towards a compromise.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to renew my motion?
Yes.
Yes, I'll renew my motion.
Sorry, we do have one other question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just, my sore shoulder told me that Representative Saylor had a question. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that I would just like to echo Representative Latz's thoughts. Actually, I thought of them before he said them. But anyway.
That's how I thought of them.
Yeah. Actually, these provisions are exactly what I've been hearing from schools when I've been visiting with counselors and other support staff. This is definitely identifying a need that's out there in the schools that I've been visiting with. My concern is also with the funding. I just think, how would I explain this to teachers that I know and say, oh, and by the way, now you can also run around and find out, you know, where to find, you know, spend more time chasing down the resources. And they actually do these things already, I think, or try to. I do support the bill. I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, saying bad things about it, but I'm really concerned about actually how it would happen. It certainly sets out the need, identifies the need. So I would hope that in further discussions in finance and other places, we can figure out a way to actually put some funding, some teeth with this. Thank you.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got just a question of the author or your testifier there. In Subdivision 3, it says districts in the department must consider nationally recommended licensed staff to student rate. What are nationally recommended? Where do they come from? I mean, I'm not sure. They're national, but what does that mean?
Representative Meslow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland. Each of these support services groups has a national organization, and each one of them has a recommended ratio within, with one exception, four out of five of them have nationally recommended ratios. Last year's bill actually included those ratios in it, but there is a considerable degree of flexibility within those ratios. The reference in the bill is simply that districts are to consider that, not that they are required to meet those ratios.
Representative Eastland.
Just one follow-up. Would it be possible to assume that if these professional organizations are making recommendations that there could be some bias in those? I guess that's where I'm coming from. What we're doing is we're asking, you know, the professional organizations that are going to be providing these services to make recommendations to as to the need. And I guess I'm just questioning. That's the only thing that's referenced in here that people must consider. And I guess I would just question whether that's the only place that this kind of information can be found, and whether or not it's reliable would be my question.
Representative Meslow, a comment? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, I think it is natural that the areas that we choose to focus our lives and our professions are in are areas that we're also passionate about. And in that sense, I can see where there would be an increased emphasis in that out of each of these organizations. That's why the final decision rests within the school district, with the board and the administration. And that's why what they're directed to do is to consider, not to implement.
Members, seeing no further questions, Representative Erickson renews
yes.
her motion.
I'll renew my motion that House File 1680 be recommended to pass and be referred to
the Committee on Education Finance.
Okay, any further questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and those opposed, no. Motion passes, re-referred, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Next, we're going to move to Senate File 244, Representative Demmer. Did we do the minutes? Sure.
Chair, you know, if someone else is, we're waiting for the copy to come down from upstairs, maybe in the interest of time. I mean, I can talk about it, but we need to have the language.
Okay, we at least we can do, someone can move the minutes from April 5th. We're waiting for an amendment, I believe, to that's being copied. Minutes, Representative Peterson, move the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the minutes.
Okay. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The minutes are approved. And also the minutes of April 4th. I guess I'm going backwards in time. And
is that the that we're waiting for?
I'm not. Minutes of April 4, Representative Nornes. April 4 moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The minutes are passed. I think our
waiting for the event.
Okay. Okay. We thought that might be here earlier, or is that it? It is. Okay. All right. We were going to switch and. But I don't think we need to.
Did you get those copies?
Yeah. Representative Demmer, maybe we can at least begin. You moved the bill and recommended to pass, and it would go right to the General Register, as I understand it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Actually, Mr. Chair, we're talking about House File 1144, and actually Senate File 244 is what we're working with. That's been passed by the Senate. It's on their consent calendar, actually.
Okay.
So I guess I would, how do we do that? Do I move Senate File 244?
I believe so, and then we would, that's, and then you've got to delete all amendment, I see. So let's move the bill, 244.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is appropriate. Can I move this to the consent calendar? Is that something I can do, and we can discuss it?
That's a committee the decision can make, and we could, okay. Let's move the bill, and then if the committee decides that it truly is something we think should be on the consent calendar, we can put that motion into play and move it to that. So.
Okay, well, again, I move Senate File 244 then to be referred to the general, recommended to pass, referred to the General Register.
And then you want to move the delete all SO244DE2,
yes,
the delete all amendment to get the bill in shape.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer moves the delete all amendment to get it in shape. All in favor indicates by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Then the passes. Now we have the delete all before us. Representative Demmer.
Okay, Mr. Chair. First of all, the purpose of the bill. The purpose of the bill is to allow for consecutive teaching experience when someone is in their probationary teaching time and gets called off to military service. What's happened is, as you know, when a teacher first starts as a brand new teacher, they have a 3-year probationary period during which they can be terminated without cause at any given time, at the end of any given year. What was happening, it was brought to our attention, is that the teacher will serve, say, a year of probationary time, be called to military service. When they come back, they start over again with their 3 years. This bill attempts to give them credit for that year they already taught. Now, to be clear, we're not saying, let's just use an example for illustrative purposes. If I'm a probationary teacher and I teach for a year, be called to military service and I'm gone for a year and I come back, I'm now in year 2 of my probationary time. This is something else that was brought to, was asked about. We're not giving them teaching credit for being in the service. We're just not causing them to lose the time they already spent because they went to the service. That's the purpose of the bill. Now, what we did with the delete all amendment, and the reason we had to do it, there was 2 issues. One was brought to my attention by Representative Dabney, and it had to do with the whole cities of the first school districts in the first class versus in the laws dealing with them separate from the rest of the school districts in the state. The original language of the bill only dealt with the districts in the state, not the schools of the first class, and obviously probationary teachers in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth. Their service is just as honorable as anybody else's. There was no intent to leave that out, so I thank Representative Dabney for bringing that to my attention. So we incorporated that change, and I'm hoping that that satisfies that. The other thing that we did is we needed to clear up the original language of the bill said if they leave and then come back at a later date to resume teaching. We thought we needed to define later date. So page 3, line 21 is the, I'm sorry, the line 22 through 25 is what we changed from the Senate version. And we just defined later date to be resume teaching consistent with federal reemployment timelines for uniformed service personnel. What that does, and I should have had a copy of that, I'm sorry, I don't. What it does is defines how soon they need to come back. And there's 3 different classifications. There's if you're gone from 1 to 30 days, and if you're gone from 30 to 180 days, and if you're gone from 180 days on up, how much time you have to come back and resume teaching to be considered continues. The idea is that we don't have people coming back from military service doing something else for a year and decided to come back for teacher and they're gone for 2 years. We didn't want that. When they come back from military service, they need to report back to their teaching position within a reasonable period of time. There are federal guidelines for that, and that's what we incorporated here. And if my memory serves me, I don't even have my copy of that. If my memory serves me, from 180 days on up, which I think a year's service would cover a lot of our service people, you have like 90 days or something to come back and get yourself reacquainted and reapply for work. So, members and Mr. Chair, I guess that kind of covers what the bill does. I'd be open to questions to clarify any questions. I'd be open to questions, see if I can clarify anything that's out there.
Okay, Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, I guess my only comment would be that it seems like a kind of a no-brainer, and I think the consent material is clearly in front of us. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
I came to the same conclusion in listening to it. It makes a lot of sense to me. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a curious, Representative Demmer, how many teachers a year or has this affected? I mean, do we have any kind of a number that is this affect like 5, 10? How many teachers fall under this circumstance here?
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eastland, be honest, I don't know. When this idea was brought to me, I thought it was kind of a no-brainer, and I didn't even inquire for statistics, whether it's 1 or 15. I thought it made a lot of sense to me, so I'm sorry I don't have statistics on that.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative East.
That was my question. Has there been some situation where this has been a problem? I guess that was where I was going. Are there some districts or some circumstances where this has become an issue between the local teacher representatives and the school board, school district?
Representative Dimmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, I'm not aware of a specific instance. The bill was actually brought to me by Senator Kiskaden, who said that this was something that I think she was working with the Veterans Affairs with, and I honestly don't have any statistics or even examples.
Okay.
Let's see. Another question, Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I know the answer already, but if a soldier or Marine is injured and he comes back on rehab, I was I guess he's still going to be on active duty until his rehab is complete, and then he can he'll get released from active duty, so his time would not start till after he was rehabbed, I would assume.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, as a good politician, I'll answer your question with a question. Are they still in active duty if they come back and they're in the hospital for 3 months, 5 months? If they're still considered active duty, then that would be considered still that interim service. If that turned into be a problem, I would say that's something we have to fix. I don't know if we can anticipate that or not. But if they're still considered active duty, that would still be their time away, and I would say that we'd be covered.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Wardlow.
I think I knew the answer to that before, but I was just thought about it. And they can buy back their TRA pension, I'm assuming?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, we didn't deal with that. I'm not sure how that would be affected.
To this point, Representative Heidegger.
Yeah, my understanding there, I know in the Vietnam War that there were a number of soldiers or teachers that went after when they got back, they were able to buy into the TRA. I don't know if Mr. Meeks is up there or if anybody can answer that, but I think that's still in play yet. I think if they still can buy their retirement credit. So,
Mr. Chair, Representatives Wardlow and Heidegger, I think you're right. The Pensions Commission dealt with that very issue, I believe, just recently, where military service people can come back and buy back their retirement time. And I think I was involved even with that in the Pension Commission. I think that would deal with this. You'd have to buy it back at the rate, you know, the proper, I can't remember the term.
Actuarial value, probably.
Yeah, at the
would probably be low in this case.
At the actuarial value, that was the key. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Severson and I were trying to figure out how this would work. In the case of a deployment which started mid-school year and was typically, say, an 18-month deployment, which I understand from the expert, Representative Severson, is quite common, and then a person would come back and start up teaching again the following fall after a three-month period after they got back, would that person get partial credit then for the, say, September through December that they taught the year that they got called up, the school year that they got called up? Would that count as 1 year for purposes of this, or would it be picked up a number of months in terms of consecutive years? How would you expect that to work? Or do we need some clarification in the bill to make sure it works?
Representative Dimmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Latz, my understanding is that they would get credit, the way the bill is currently worded, they would get credit for the time that they taught. Whether that's 2 months, 3 months, 5 days, my interpretation of this would say they'd get credit for that and pick up where they left off. So in your example, my understanding, and I'd be open to a Ms. Larson giving us an interpretation, but my understanding in reading this bill is if they taught for 3 months, 4 months, left and came back, they'd be picking up on month four or five. They'd have credit for what they've already taught.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Vissen.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Latz's question, Representative Latz, if you look at the definition of probationary period, which is page 1 of the bill, current law, direct your attention to lines 12 through 17. I think in the way that accommodation is written, it would be possible to split it up. I think it would be, yes.
I would think whatever is current practice would, this is simply saying current practice would continue for someone whose service and teaching was interrupted by service in the military. So I think it would be the same. We've had a bit of a discussion going here. Are there any further questions as to whether or not after we've amended a Senate file, if it should still go to the consent calendar? And Representative Biskins and I both thought that would there's no reason why that should be blocking an obstacle to that. So, members, unless someone has a reason to think that it should not be, it should be on the general register. Representative Demmer will amend his motion that it be recommended to pass and referred to the consent calendar.
And seeing no discussion, that is the motion, so that's Senate File 244, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the consent calendar. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, no. Motion passes. We move to Representative Seifert. Senate File 180.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I'll move this bill.
Okay, Representative Erickson, I was looking for a motion. Didn't know if we had a twin in the body. Representative Erickson moves Senate File 180 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My first and only bill, I don't know if I'll have some more coming through here, probably not. I think this is your last day. And I'm hopefully an alumni in good standing of this committee for many years. Mr. Chairman, members, this is a bill that was brought to me from Wendy Havistow, who's a mother of twins. My wife happens to be a twin. Her husband happens to be a twin, and I'm sure everybody in the room probably knows somebody that's related to twins somehow. The bill has been worked out, I believe, with all the parties. It started out with some concern, I believe, from the school boards, but the ultimate decision will lie with the school board. But it's a pro-parent, pro-child bill, I believe. There's been a lot of study done in some of these books. If anybody's ever followed up on some of the multiple birth things, which I've kind of been brought into because my wife is a twin. The oddities that happen with that. But this bill basically allows children to be placed in the same classroom at the parents' request. If there is a problem with disruption or problems, there is a provision to allow the administrators and the board to separate. But the studies I've seen show that multiples will have that special bond that oftentimes it's disruptive to separate them more than it is disruptive to keep them together, if members can follow that line of reasoning, and that it affects their learning if they're separated, and some administrators don't follow the bonds that twins often have. Ultimately, discretion is up to the administrators and the board, so I think that is what took care of the concerns from that side of the discussion. But I think from the family side, we want to have families and parents involved in their children's education more so and to allow them to learn. So I will turn it over to the testifiers. I have Ms. Havistone, and I have Blaine Hoopert, who is also a parent of twins, and then we'll stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, and good morning to the witness, and please identify yourself to the tape.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Wendy Havistone. I am a mother of twins, boy-girl twins. They're right behind me, Nicholas and Victoria. Some of you know I used to work in the house, so the last time you all saw them, they were 3.5 months old, mm-hmm. and now they're 6.5 years old, so how time flies. And I'm also the proud wife of a twin, and my husband's behind me, and he has a fraternal twin brother. So I guess I was destined for twins. I wanted to, how do I explain? Senate File 180 was really worked out compared to House File 130. So the original language in 130 has been amended to what you see in 180. And we addressed in committee in the Senate some of the issues that were brought forth. School boards had some concerns that there wasn't sort of an appeal process, so that if parents placed their twins together or separate and it was being disruptive to that classroom, then the principal could appeal to the board for a final decision. But ultimately, this bill allows parents to keep their twins together or separated. Now, in our experience, our twins were together through ECFE, preschool, and kindergarten. And then we moved last fall, 2 weeks before the school year started. We moved to a new house. And we were told by the school, because I asked them in writing and orally if they could be together, no problem, that would be fine. And we got to the open house to find out that they were separated. And we were absolutely totally upset about this because we were so reassured they'd be together. And our twins were experiencing a lot of changes in their life. They had a new house. They had their own rooms for the first time. They were riding the bus for the first time, change of daycare. My husband got a new job. So they had all these traumatic, if you will, all these traumatic things going on in their lives. And they really needed to be together. They really relied on each other to get through those situations. And for the first 6 weeks of school, it was a horrible experience. My son, I was getting calls that our son was crying in school and being disruptive because he was crying. Well, he was crying because he missed his sister. That's all there was to it. And I had told the school, if you would have let them be together, you wouldn't have this problem. And they wouldn't do that. And then so he would cry at school. Victoria would cry at home after school. And I would just cry in between because it was just a terrible experience. But we reluctantly, after 6 weeks, we reluctantly went with what the school said and said, well, let's keep them separate for now. And we said, and the twins said, we want to be together next year. The school did give us an option, and that was to take each child out of their separate classroom, put them together, but put them in a third completely different classroom. So they essentially would be starting all over again in another school in another classroom. And we asked Nick and Tori about that, if they wanted to do that, and Nick and Tori, with their twin thing, you know, they looked at each other, and then they immediately said, no, we don't want to confuse our classmates. So they weren't even thinking of themselves at that time. They were thinking of how other kids would react to the disruption in the classroom by having them removed, which for six-year-olds I thought was pretty impressive. But we did request that they be together next year, and thankfully to my state representative, he has intervened on our behalf, and the principal has agreed to let them be together next year. But the real importance of this legislation is that this legislation will not only prevent all this kind of thing from happening to other parents, but it'll also help prevent lawsuits. And I know of three families that have attorneys that are ready to sue their school districts just over this issue. And this having this in statute will help alleviate that. You have a huge packet of information that we have handed out prior to committee. You have some testimony from a Dr. Nancy Siegel, and she has written this book, Entwined Lives. She has studied twins for 25 years and is a specialist in not only twin studies, but especially how twins are in the classroom, twins and higher order births in the classroom. And I've also included a resolution from the Oklahoma House of Representatives that was passed in 1994 on twin class placement, and also a study that Dr. Siegel has done. So there's some information for you. There's also a couple of letters of support from Minnesota Valley Mothers and Multiples, which is, I believe, the largest Mothers and Multiples group in the state. They represent, I believe, I want to say 400 families, but it might be more than that. And then, of course, a letter of support from the National Organization of Mothers of Twins Clubs as well. With that, I will let Mr. Blaine Hoopert testify. If there's a committee page, I do have his testimony that he presented in the Senate, but he's shortened it for you all because we know you have a long agenda today.
Good morning, and identify yourself.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present for you today. My name is Blaine Hoopert, and my twin sons, Zachary and Xavier, are in kindergarten. My family's experience with this issue began about a year ago when my wife contacted our school principal and requested that Zach and Zave be in the same class. Without meeting my sons, without any research, our principal decided that it was best for them to be in separate classrooms. After much discussions, the week before classes, the principal finally agreed to our wishes. During the next 4 months, My wife and I met with the principal 5 times. Each one of our meetings opened with him insisting that it was time for our sons to be in separate classes. Ultimately, the week before Christmas, and a week after we contacted the superintendent's office, he agreed that Zach and Zave could finish the school year in the same classroom, but not before telling us that if we wanted them in the same classroom next year, it would be at a different school. In his words, "You have to think about what's best for your family. I have to think about what's best for the school." As far as we've been told, Zach and Zave have not posed a discipline problem. They've not been disruptive in the classroom. To date, the best reason given for the need to separate them is that some teachers have a hard time telling them apart. Well, that's the extremely short version of our situation. More broadly, there is no evidence that shows conclusively that all twins perform better apart or together. It's not that simple. All kids are different. Each set of twins is different. Each twin bond, each twin relationship is unique. This really isn't so much an issue about separate or together, but about the rights of parents to do what we believe is best for our children. Please support this piece of legislation, and I'm open to any questions. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Mr. Chair, if you have any questions for my husband or my kids, you can feel free to ask them. Just an idea of how different sets of twins are. My husband and his brother always start and finish each other's sentences, and my kids just talk in twin babble that I can't even understand. So when I get all 4 of them in the same room, I really have a hard time understanding what's going on. So that's just an example of how different multiples can really be.
My wife does that too.
Yeah. To you or to the twin?
Members, any questions so far of the witnesses? And I believe we have one person who has asked to testify on the bill. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. Is it is there a time in their life as a student where this is not as critical? For example, when they get to high school or junior high, is it still pretty much recommended they be together, or is there a time when they kind of go in different directions?
And Ms. Avisto.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nornes, it depends on the twins. For example,
correct me if I'm wrong,
but my husband and his brother were together all through high school, I believe.
Correct?
No? Through junior high. But they shared a room until after they graduated from high school. So they were together through junior high. Now, my kids, because they're a boy and a girl, we're leaving it kind of up to them, but we'll probably separate them by like fourth or fifth grade. But each set is different, and depending on the situation will depend on whether or not we're going to separate our twins. Now, again, we had huge circumstances going on at the time we were enrolling them in school, and that was the time to keep them together, even though the school didn't want to. That's what we wanted. But no, we won't keep them together forever, because basically I can just tell that my kids are going to go, okay, I'm getting tired of you, and I need to have my own, you know, have my own space and that kind of thing. I don't know if Mr. Hooper wants to comment.
Yeah, and the research would suggest that twins will develop their own individuality about the time, the same time as any other kid, in the early teen years, from like age 10 to age 13. Up until that point, twins together in the same classroom are good. They need the support from each other in many cases. And then about the time they hit 10 or 12 in that range, they'll want to be apart and oftentimes spend a lot of time apart until they get to be about 30 or so. And then they start to remember that relationship that they had when they were young. What they're finding through research is that twins that they separate early, you know, will spend all the time that they can together, and actually will cling more together in high school, and will spend a lot more time in high school if they weren't together in the early ages.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Visto.
With just one comment to Senator Frederickson, who's the chief author, my boss, of the Senate file, he has 38-year-old twins, boy-girl twins, and he testified in committee that even though they are 38 years old, they're still just as tight as can be, and they live in completely different communities, call each other all the time, you know, but that bond is still there. Mm-hmm. They were together too through junior high, I believe. So.
Okay. We have one person who's asked to testify on the bill, Mr. Arnson. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I was going to clarify that I'm not Ms. Havistow's representative. I think Representative Atkins has the power to intervene in the school and get these things done. My school just laugh at me, but Representative Atkins is the person who is her representative, not me.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And he's a co-author of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Aronson?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary School Principals Association, and we've visited about this bill based on a lot of the testimony that's been adduced in the Senate, and my clients asked me to make some comments to the committee about the bill. Obviously, a couple things about this. First of all, I think you heard some balanced testimony here today that said research tells people all kinds of things about whether it's right or wrong to split twins. By and large, school principals make hundreds of decisions about where kids are going to be placed. What we'd like to caution you a bit about this piece of legislation is we really think this ought to be a local type matter rather than discussing this here with the committee. This bill has a lot of, on the practical side of it, I mean, let me say, I think the testimony is balanced. That you've heard here today, and there is nothing more important than accommodating parents with regard to these kids. That's what we want to do. But this bill has some technicalities in it. It has deadlines. It has appeals in it. It might raise some other questions as well. I'm a little at a loss to say don't do this, but as a policy matter, you know, we think this decision and the problems that these parents experienced or other parents experienced should have been resolved at the local school board level rather than rising, you know, to the level of legislation and going through this, Mr. Chair. So with that, I'd answer any questions that you might have.
I need care. Any questions or Representative Erickson?
No, I don't have a question. I have a comment, but I had many multiples through my years of teaching, and April Fool's Day was a day I really had to get ready for because I knew the identicals were going to set me up, and they did every year. It was great fun. I usually tried to find some distinguishing feature between the girls or between the boys when there were multiples to make sure they didn't fool me, but it happened every year.
Yeah. Any further or any other comments, questions, Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question was for Mr. Aronson, so sorry, I was slow about that. I, like everybody else here, I'm sure, has a multiple to relate to, and mine is my son-in-law, and I did check with him about this bill, and he shared the concern that you had about why in the world are we taking time with this at the legislature. But having gotten past that, then he agreed that he and his brother should have been put together, left together, and his parents didn't care. They left it up to the school. They were a military family used to taking orders, and whatever the school said was right, and the kids didn't have any parents intervening like the lucky twins here today, I guess, have. Since it is here, I'm wondering, what is the policy of elementary principals? If it had been, you know, it's one of these issues I, too, wish could have been solved, taking into account parents' wishes at the local level and not come here. But obviously it didn't happen that way. So what is there any policy that elementary principals have that could have taken care of this if it hadn't come here?
Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, I think that's a really good question. After the bill was initially heard, because I didn't realize it was going to be such a fuss about this, I went out and talked to several of the principals and said, what's the deal with this? And it appeared to me that the standard practice and the best practice among principals was to do what the parents wanted. If the parents wanted them together, fine. If the parents wanted them split, fine. That was the best way to handle it. As I said, you heard some testimony here that says the research is all over. We want parents to be happy about this stuff. So that's the answer to that. Is the policy is, and Representative Seifert's bill with that direction, I think, is consistent with that. So it's what do the parents want?
Okay. Any further questions, Representative Peterson?
No, mine's been answered.
Okay. Representative Seifert, any final comments?
Oh.
Mr. Chair, I don't think so. Ms. Havistow has a wrap-up comment, or Representative Marquardt has.
Representative Marquardt had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Seifert, I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I'm a twin, and my twin brother and I were in the same class through eighth grade, and I remember one year they were going to separate us, and my mom stepped in and said, "I'm not doing two different sets of homework." Out of two different classes. So that was the rationale back then.
That's really funny.
And also, in one year, and I had a brother who was 20 years older, in one classroom, it was my twin brother and I and a niece of mine all in the same classroom. Could you imagine having two uncles of yours in the same class, literally? So it was a little different situation, but I strongly believe it should be the parental choice on this one, and it would be nice if you could work it out on a local level, but I appreciate this, and I would strongly support this legislation.
Ms. Havistow.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's funny that you mentioned the homework, because that's been one of the headaches of having these two in different classes, is that we never know whose homework goes to who and when it's due and what books go where, and Victoria got to participate in Book It, the Pizza Hut deal, and Nicholas didn't. So you can imagine how that went over. And actually, their teachers worked it out now, because now they have a McDonald's certificate for reading, and they included Nicholas's teacher, let him be in that. So that made our lives a heck of a lot easier that way. But I do want to reiterate, too, though, contrary to what was said, we're not trying to take local control away from the school district. In our mind, the ultimate local control starts with the parents. I and my husband are our primary children's educators. That is the bottom line. We worked with our school. We did everything to work with our school, and they wouldn't help us. And we worked with the principal. He didn't want to hear about it. He didn't want to hear anything. Mr. Hooper and his wife worked extensively with their principal and were met with roadblocks, and to the point where they're ready to sue their school. And if we have this in statute, we're going to help avoid lawsuits and just say, hey, listen to the parents so that they know what's best for their children. It's also in language that, you know, the parents should consult with their educators on what's best for the children. And I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to talk to my kids as teachers, and my husband is too. But I don't want them totally ignoring what I think is best for our children. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Erickson would renew her motion.
Yes.
That Senate File 180 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Yes.
Any further questions? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The bill passes and goes to the General Register. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members.
Thank you. The twin stories multiply. Mine is the reverse. My twin aunts used to take turns going to the conferences for my cousins, depending on how much trouble the cousin was in and who wanted to listen to the story. So it was the switch on the teacher. Okay, members, we're getting the guidelines handed out that were referenced in Representative Demmer's bill in terms of the timely return to work, so further information. So thank you for that. Final bill on the schedule will go to House File 834, Representative Dietrich, and I believe this bill has to go to the Finance Committee after it leaves here.
This one did? I was not under that impression.
I think because of the reward in portion of it, I would guess it's Representative Sikora's problem.
I was told it was coming to Finance.
Yeah. Okay. So. So Representative Dietrich moves House File 834 be recommended to pass and referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Biskins. I think he brought donuts in honor of my first bill hearing today. And so I think that really demonstrates his support of freshmen and bipartisan support on this committee, so I thank him very much. Yes, House File 834 grants school district authority to offer certain rewards to persons who provide information that leads to apprehension and arrest of a person or persons who have committed a crime against school property, students, or personnel. And now that I have, I think if this is, the language is straightforward, it's basically been non-controversial. And there is an amendment, and I would like to move that amendment right now, Amendment A1.
Representative Dietrich moves Amendment H.O. 834 A1, which basically is getting the bill into the final shape that you're looking for.
Yes.
Any discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment passes. Representative Dietrich, 834 as amended. Any further comments?
Mr. Chair, I forgot to make a verbal amendment to the amendment.
Oh, okay.
And the verbal amendment to Amendment A1 would be is to add parents and students on line 7 after school administrators.
So line 7 after school administrators.
Yes. So that the Commissioner of Education would also be consulting with parents and students in devising the model policy.
Representative Larson, now I'm doing it. Pretty soon it'll be Madam Chair back. School administrators, parents, students, that's what I was looking for. So Representative Dietrich moves to amend, now it would be 834 as amended, by adding on line 7 of the A1 amendment after administrators, we would insert parents, students,
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. That amendment passes. Now we are on the 834 as amended. Any further comments? And you have a testifier with you.
Yes, but I this bill is a school board, Minnesota School Board Association bill, and so I would like to invite Kirk from the Minnesota School Board Association to give a little bit of the legal history to this bill.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is an issue
that... Please
state
your name for the tape.
Pardon me. My name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And this was an issue that came before us. We had a call in our office, and we're asking whether school districts could offer rewards because at an instant where there was a bomb threat, I believe it was, and it was one of those questions that was asked, and you should have known. You'd known the answer, and then you did a little bit. We did a little bit more research and found out that... based on the state auditor's opinion and in the expenditures by school districts, it did not allow school districts to expend funds for rewards that did not have a public purpose behind it. And we argued that, obviously disagreed with that, and it came before our delegate assembly and passed the MSBA delegate assembly in December, and we would argue that it does have a public purpose when you have public dollars invested in buildings and personnel and hardware and computers. And if there's any threats or damages or criminal activities to those structures, we believe that school districts should have that authority to offer rewards for accurate and reliable information to apprehend or catch those individuals who committed the crime. So we also think that this may be a small deterrent in some ways for schools as well in cases where we know that there may be a crime committed, and they know that a student may share that information with the administration and limit the possibility or deter the possibility that any crime against a school district or personnel may occur. So I think it's a very straightforward bill, and again, we want to thank Representative Dietrich for bringing that forward.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Any discussion? Yes, sir. Representative Dietrich, any final comments
or?
Well, I would just like to thank the committee for their support. Most of the committee members have signed on to this bill already, so it obviously has bipartisan support. And it is non-controversial, and it sends a message to our school boards that we appreciate the work that they do, and we are trying to empower them with all the tools that they need to keep our schools safe.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no further discussion, Representative Dietrich renews her motion that House File 834, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Education Finance. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? No. The motion passes. The bill moves on to Education Finance. Members, I apologize. I was a little bit late this morning because I had another meeting, and it's funny how those half-hour meetings at 7:30 always turn into one-hour meetings no matter what we do, but I would hope you would, on the other side of the ledger, note that we're finishing a bit earlier than has been our custom, so I'll...
Thank you.
You always take credit even though you're not responsible for it, but thank you, Representative Biskins, for giving me the opportunity to sit in this chair. Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, usually the first person who does something kind of sets the pace for the rest of the day. So I just want to make that comment.
Duly noted. And Representative Biskins, you had one announcement to make about our agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, just want to ask if you would please pencil in a date at this time. We are planning on an informational hearing of this committee, and it will be on the statewide teacher health care plan. It will be a hearing in which it's for information only. We are making this known now. Pencil in Tuesday, April 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. in the basement hearing room. Now, I ask you to pencil this in because our first priority here at the legislature, of course, is getting committee work done, and we need to be sensitive to the work in particular that Chair Sikora has to do with K-12 finance. And so if we can work this together, we'll do it at that time. If it changes, you'll be noted, you will be informed immediately via email. But that will be an informational hearing only. We are going to invite organizations which both support and oppose the legislation, and hopefully it will be an atmosphere and environment where we can have good, frank information brought forward, non-threatening. There will be no votes taken on the legislation, but it's my personal belief, all right, with nothing actually to guarantee or verify, but it's my personal belief that we will probably see a floor amendment on this issue, and I think it behooves members of this committee to have the facts when discussing that rather than anecdotes. So that's the purpose of having that informational hearing, and thank you. And members, if you would please, on your way out, even if it's a squirrel away for later, grab a donut, all right? And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't catch you. Was there a time, Representative Biskins? 6 o'clock.
6 till 9, Representative Demmer.
All right. A.M. or P.M.?
That'll first.
Don't tell me.
Don't give him ideas. Seeing no further items of business, we're adjourned.